Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. Here on Driven to Business, we like to talk to a variety of people, but I especially enjoy speaking to the people that run small businesses. And our guest today is my good friend Tobin Sexton with Sexton Tire. Tobin, welcome to Driven to Business.
Hey, Eddie. Good to be talking with you.
Tobin, tell us about what you guys do there at Sexton Tire.
Okay, well, we're a family business that was started by my father almost 50 years ago, and family-owned, and we have 29 employees as of today, and we specialize in selling aircraft tires that come off aircraft, and we distribute them and create markets for them for non-flyable use. And it's something my dad started and created years and years ago. So it's kind of a specialized business. We also have two other divisions that wholesale new tires, and we also do used tires and off-the-road tires. And so we do a little bit of everything.
You know, to say that's a specialized business, taking aircraft tires and putting them on other things, is an understatement. Where in the world did your dad get that idea? Who thought of that?
I think, Eddie, he thought of it in a bar, but we're talking to some friends. But it's the coolest thing because there's thousands and thousands of aircraft casings that eventually come off and can't be flown anymore. And so he saw that, hey, these things are really – they're strong and they're cheap, and why don't we try and create a market for them? And now, from that idea, we're shipping them to almost 30 different countries.
Was anyone else doing that when he started doing that?
He wasn't the first. He got it from a company called Harmo up in Detroit, Michigan, in the 40s. And they were the first ones that kind of toyed with it. And then he was down here in Atlanta, and him and his brother decided, hey, why can't we do that down here? And so they talked to Delta and Eastern at that time and started getting tires. And so he was probably the second guy to really, but he put it on the map in a big way.
You know, I'm in the electronic motor drive business, which is another specialized niche business. But when I got into it, there were already a lot of other people doing it. So I didn't basically invent a business like you guys did. That's really wild. You talk about your dad starting it. I know you guys are still a family business. You read a lot about, and as some of our listeners know, in our business is a bit of a family business as well. But you read a lot about family businesses, and you hear a lot about them, both good and bad. I'm just curious if you have advice for people that are thinking of starting a family business.
Well, I would tell them not to do it. But
hope your family's not listening right now.
Yeah. So, seriously, a family business, it gives you opportunities that you couldn't get in the corporate world. My father was a post World War II guy that started with nothing, and him and my uncle drove two trucks down to South Georgia and would pick up used tires and bring them back to Atlanta and start selling them. And that's so when I got graduated from college, he wanted me to come into the business. I certainly understand the struggles and issues of working for your father, and my dad was no different probably. He just, it was hard for him to sometimes just move aside, and because he loved it so much and it was his baby, but at the same hand, you got to grow and experience. But I would say now, for somebody to start a family business, just communication and sitting down and just knowing what's expected of all your brothers and sisters, it can be done right. And we're doing that now since my father passed away 3 months ago, and it's really going well. And even if somebody doesn't agree with something, we talk it amongst ourselves, and that seems to be working. So we've just started taking my own advice that I just brought up, and it seems to be doing well. And we're getting along, and we're close, and having a good year in business right now.
You know, the whole idea of the primary leader or the founder, particularly in a business, beginning to share responsibilities, that's not just in a family business. That's hard for, I think, any of us that founded a business. It's something you have to overcome. I think you have to look at the long game and figure out that is the way to be successful. Is you do have to turn loose some of the reins and begin to train and trust the people around you.
Yeah.
To do them pretty well. Toby, when I first moved to Atlanta here, I had a guy that I actually knew before I moved here that had a business, and I knew his sons were in the business, and so I looked him up when I got here, and we were out to eat one day, and I asked him, I said, well, do you see your son taking over the business? And his son actually was working in the business at that time. I knew it, and the guy said, no. He said, my son is an idiot. And I said, I just started laughing. I said, well, I hope you don't say that around here. But he said, yes, actually, I do. I think that's not how to have peace and harmony in a family business.
Yeah.
Is the way to do one. You know, Inc. Magazine wrote an article, and there's been a number of magazine and blogs and articles, and even books about avoiding problems in a family business. But they point out the obvious, that the conflicts inside a family business can be a little perhaps more difficult because there are other levels of interest at play other than just business. You know, in business, if you're in business with somebody and you have a business disagreement and they're not family, at least when you go home for the weekend, you're not having to look at them or anything. They don't have anything to, you know, they have nothing to do with you. But, you know, family, a family is a big deal. You don't get away from the family. Like you, our family is involved together in a business, and we've been able to navigate those waters. But it can get a little tricky, can it?
Oh yes, it can. I know. I started when I was 21, and we were real small then. We were downtown Atlanta, and my father, again, because it was his baby, if he got mad at me at the office, it seemed like it spilled over into to when we did go home and when our family was together. And I can remember sometimes that it just felt like, you know, he wouldn't even speak to me because he was mad at me from something that went on in the office. And I used to think, well, this is the reason that a son or daughter doesn't want to work for their dad, because it is just too much stress on you to get mad at the office, and then it follows you home, and then he doesn't call you or he doesn't speak to you. But with that said, over the years, I think it was my fault because I was so immature, because my dad wasn't going to change. There wasn't one. He just was not going to change. And so over the years, I learned that, hey, just be wise here and do go over and communicate and walk through whatever happened and, you know, see if they can't take something that he didn't like and turn it around to a learning process or even, a benefit. So,
Tobin, you know my wife, Vicky, and her and I worked together for quite a while. Vicky still is a little bit involved with the business, but not on a daily basis. But there was a time when she was in the office every day. And you do just have to not have conflicts at work. And not only that, because of other non-family members that are working there, you've got to be very careful not to put them in a very uncomfortable position that they're not going to want to be around. And that's something else I think anybody in a family business has to learn to deal with. Like, for instance, not making non-family employees feel like they're somehow outsiders. Because I know in our company we have some very, very, very valuable people and key people in our company that are not part of the family. But I don't want them feeling like they're not part of our business, because we're very dependent on them and they're a very big part of our business. And I think that's just something you have to deal with. The other thing is in our family, I've been really blessed in the fact that my two kids that work in the family are very conscious and very careful not to lord it over anybody else because of that, and not to abuse any of those relationships, and they don't, you know, they don't pull rank, so to speak, on people. And I think that's another big part of it, is that you just don't do that, because it's resented very much, I think, by other employees.
Yes. Same thing here. We're so small, and we're doing some volume in business, so everybody we have here is really valuable. And so we try to do the same things. We try to have great relationships, and we try to create a family atmosphere. Even though their last name is not Sexton, they feel a part and they feel important. And several years ago, especially in years where we're doing real well, I've really tried to give bonuses when revenues were up, and it seems to really have gone a long ways. Hey, the Sextons aren't the only one making money. You know, everybody's getting a piece of the pie, and so I think that's really gone a long ways with helping with what you just asked me that question.
I think that is a big part. You know, and not that you've done it or I've done it, but you do hear stories of other people working in family businesses where perhaps the family will promote some relative that's completely unqualified for a job, or promote him into a job, and that really disrupts the whole flow of things when people then have to agree with that. And I, again, in my case, thank the Lord, we've never had to deal with that. I actually enjoy working in a family business. I enjoy working with my kids. I enjoy working with everybody in our business. We have a great team there, and so I think it is something people can do. I just think you got to go in there with your eyes open and be sure that you do pay attention to it. Tobin, you're a great guest. I hope you hang around. We got more to talk with Tobin. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes and other places that I keep finding that I don't know about, where it pops up all the time. And by the way, links to Tobin's business and website and so forth will be on eddiemayfield.com. And later in the program, I'll get Tobin to spell that out for you. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's business radio, Biz 1190. So join us. We're talking with Tobin Sexton. Tobin is the president of Sexton Tire. Tobin, tell folks how to get in touch with you here in the Atlanta area.
Well, we're in Loganville, Georgia, and it's 770-466-1060. And we're also, our email address is TobySextonTires.com, and probably the only Sexton in the tire business in the city of Atlanta, so it's real easy.
Yeah, you can. By the way, you can just I know this. You can just go on his website. You can just Google Toby Sexton Tire, and it'll pop right up there, and you can get it. Like I said, also it will be on our website. Go to EddieMayfield.com. If you just get all that, go to the blog page, and there will be a little blurb about Tobin and about and with links to him there. Tobin, let's talk about a little bit of business specifics here. You're, as we've said already, you're in a niche business, just like I am. And what that means is that not everybody is a prospect for your products and services. I was just talking this morning to a guy that actually owns a Corvette reseller business here in town, and we were talking about the same thing, that not everybody is in the market for that. And certainly not everybody's in the market for your products, just like they're not in the market for mine. We're not selling toothpaste or something like that. So how do you go about finding customers? How do you do that?
Well, what we did, well, first off, we've got a 50-year history.
Which is a big deal.
Even worldwide now, when they think of aircraft tires for ground use applications, our name usually comes up to the forefront. So that's a neat thing. So number two, we found out early on that it was just too expensive to send salesmen all over the country trying to sell small units of tires. So what we do is we work, have relationships with dealers all over the country, and they actually act as our salesmen. And so because the revenue is really well on selling somebody on aircraft tires, then they're excited about it. And so word of mouth kind of goes out from them. So we really go through our dealers. They're our mouthpiece, so to speak, to distribute our products. So.
You know, the whole point of word of mouth, I don't know if you've ever read a book or anything by Malcolm Gladwell. He's written several books. One of the books he wrote is called Tipping Point, which has to do with how little things become big things. Very interesting. And he has an interesting little, right at the end of the book, I don't know if it's in the afterword or if it's just in the last chapter, but he talks about the incredible amount of information that we're all inundated with today and how hard it is for people and businesses, and as you and I both know, even at church, to get a message out because there are so many avenues and people are just inundated with it. And what he says in there is that we are re-entering, this is his thoughts, we are re-entering the age of word of mouth. I don't know if we've ever left it, but that, you know, honestly, that is there's nothing better than that, is there? As far as I've used example here a number of times that, you know, if I were wanting to go out and eat somewhere here near the radio station and I didn't know anywhere to go and Mike sitting here told me, oh, there's a great restaurant right across the street there, I'm probably going there no matter what advertisement I've seen or what anybody else says, because that's what I value, is that word of mouth from somebody I know. And I think that it is such an important thing to develop reputation and even brand. If you, like you said, if people think about aircraft tires all over the world because you've been around 50 years, that's the brand associated with that. That's a great place to be, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, I look at it, it's like when you buy a new car, you want to show that new car off to everybody.
Right.
And you're just proud of it, and you like it, you like the way it smells, you like the way it runs. And in the same sense, you convert a machine that was having problems and what have you, and you put aircraft tires on there, and immediately your flat problem goes away. It's performing. The driver loves it. Then they're going to do the same thing just like they would with a new car. They're going to say, hey, look at these aircraft tires. They only cost so much. And hey, Toby Sexton Tires, where I got them.
Exactly. That's a great thing to do. Hey, what is a term? You sort of alluded to it just now, but what is a term? Good customer service mean to you? What's that mean?
I know what it is for our dealers. They want us to give good service. They want us to get the product to them, and they want it to be exactly what they ordered. They no more, no less. It needs to be perform well, and if there are problems, then you come right back and you fix them. And that's what it means to me. Good service, and then they can trust you on the next order or the next order that, hey, they're going to stand behind their products, and these things are going to work well and hopefully pay their bill on time.
Exactly. Hey, that's the other part of it. That's another part of business that some people don't think about, is just because you get an order, that's not necessarily the end of the game there. You have to get paid for it as well. You know, we've had entire programs on here, but both with guests and without guests, about customer service. But you know, you'd said the word trust. That, I think that is such that's what it all centers around. If they don't trust you, if they suspect what you say, you know, Toby, we had a situation this week at our company where one of our vendors of some large equipment that we sell, we had a chance to get an order. We asked for a delivery time. They gave us a delivery time. We gave it to the customer. In fact, we added a little bit to it because we wanted to be sure that we're not, because we happen to know this customer delivery time is a very, very big deal, this customer. And then that was like a week ago, and then we put the order in with our vendor, and they come back and then this morning came back and said, well, you know, that delivery time is going to be pushed off 2 weeks. And we're like, you cannot do that. You know, it's going to look like we just lied about the delivery time to get the order, and that's going to erode trust the company has in us. And you just can't do that. You know, you've got to tell us the truth up front about what the real – it's so annoying, and I think it's something people don't get. Hey, Toby, and if we have to talk about this after the break, that's fine. But I know you both as a businessman, and I know you as a man of faith. And I've asked this question from a number of Christian business people. Do good business practices ever conflict with being a Christian?
Well, I think my Christian faith gives me a set of principles that I operate here Monday through Friday. Over the years, there have been some situations come up in some, where I would say gray areas, where customers have wanted us to do certain things in exporting or bill certain things, and so you have to just decide, is it worth taking a risk, and how is that going to look to that customer if it's something shady and you do the same thing, then you become shady. So but most of the time it's just I think it helps me be a better president here, because I'm operating on a set of guidelines and principles that work. And so I really try to apply them here in the way I treat people and the way I talk. And tire dealers, as a rule, are a pretty rowdy bunch across the United States. And so I try to just walk in ebb and flow in a way that maybe they'll, see something in me that's just a little different. And that, again, it just builds trust that I'm not going to try to hurt them in any way with their business. So
many times thought about the fact that good customer service is fully consistent with our Christian faith and with the principles we try to live by, because you're trying to do the right thing. It doesn't mean you don't make money in a business, because that's part of doing the right thing in a business. You can't stay in business without it. But the fact that you're not going to cheat somebody, and you are honest in what you tell them, and that's what your word does mean something. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Reminding you again, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's business radio, biz1190. Tell your friends. We're talking with Tobin Sexton with Sexton Tire. Tobin, how would you define your leadership style? Or maybe even a better question is, how would the folks at work for you define your leadership style?
Well, after they quit laughing, I thought a lot about this question. I think it goes back to my dad. He set a tone here and a culture of how this business could ebb and flow. It's really a kind of a scrap type business, and there's lots of details and there's lots of hard work, so I would like to think I started when I was just a young boy at 13. So my leadership style, I think, would be best described by a lead by example. There's not one job here, and we got a lot of different ones to do that I haven't done. And if it wasn't getting done, that I wouldn't go out and get it done, especially if I had a customer that was waiting on that order. So the best way I could describe that would be lead by example and try to communicate as much as possible, which is really my weakness. So,
when I worked for sort of my business mentors, were the two guys in Texas some years ago that hired me into the field that I'm in now and have been in all of my adult life pretty much. And one thing I always picked up from the president that I worked for out there at the company was he was a pretty successful guy, especially from where I came from. He was a pretty successful guy, a multimillionaire made out there in Texas. Mm-hmm. And he would come through the shop when we were busy at times doing things back there, and he would just walk over, and he was always friendly to everybody. He'd go over and pick up the trash can and take it out to the dumpster. I mean, without mm-hmm. – and he didn't do it to make like a, hey, I'm having to take the trash out, why didn't you? That wasn't the attitude. It was just like, oh, I'll take it out. that I learned a lot just watching that. Is that it made us all have a lot of respect for the guy. The fact that here's this guy coming through back in those days in a three-piece suit would literally pick up a trash can and take it out. And I've tried to model that in our company, the same thing, is that we're not better than anybody else. I don't know if you read Jim Collins or not, but, you know, Collins in his book Good to Great and in his later books talks about the trait, the most important trait of leadership in his research was humility. And I think it's what you're describing right there. The idea that you lead by example, you're not too good to do any job there. You have done most jobs there, and we don't lord it over people that we're better than they are. I think that's a – and, you know, I notice most guys that run successful businesses, Tobin, that's how they are. Most of them are quite humble people. They I think that's how they got to their position, which is a little bit – I think a little antagonistic to what we have read and maybe thought about great business leaders were. You know, think about guys like Warren Buffett and people like that, and you read their personal leadership style. They're not annoying, arrogant people that come in, and they're very calm. I think it's a great thing to do. I'm sure your dad was a big leader, mentor to you, but was there anybody else? Do you have any other mentors that taught you a lot about leadership, either in or out of your business?
He was. My dad was a from a little boy, he had all these sayings, you know, they were annoying then, but it's amazing how they've stayed with you.
Here's the deal, Tom, we're all getting older. We all have them now. That's the problem.
He used to always say, son, buy a tire for $1 and sell it for $2. That's 1% markup. So that stuck with me over the years. But the key to our business is so much is in the buying, and that's
right.
What takes years and years to learn. And it's hands-on loading tires and unloading tires and not just think about how dirty that tire is or it's full of water, but what can you make on that tire?
Right.
And that's what he taught me how to do. And me and him butted heads a lot, but that one thing right there is probably why we're still making money today. It's in your buying, not in your selling. So he was an influence. And then my Uncle George, who was the general manager for years, was such a great – he was the calm, humble and he just helped me so much because he actually knew that the future of the company was going to be with me, and he did everything he could to help me and not hurt me. And so that really helped me in my early 20s. My Uncle George actually just moved over so I could learn and grow. So I'll never forget that.
You know, I that's part of what I think I'm so grateful for some people that gave me opportunities in business. And one of the things I have really tried to do in my life, and it's interestingly enough, it's one of the most rewarding things. And I've interviewed a lot of business owners in here that sort of tell me the same thing, that one of the most rewarding things they've done is help other people in their business come along and be successful. And it is a very, it's sort of like, and I think as parents, we appreciate this. It's sort of like when you help your kids grow up. It's a very rewarding thing when you see what they become. And I do think a lot of folks in business perhaps overlooked that. Hey, swapping horses just a little bit here. Do you think, as small business guys, as entrepreneurs, do you think our political leaders in the United States have enough of an appreciation for what small business people do in this country?
No. They actually work against a small business. It just seems like it's harder and harder every year. I know 35 years ago, health care was not a big issue
right.
with our company, and now it's the third largest expense we have here, and we don't even know if we're going to be able to keep it for the next year or the year after. And
right.
so that's they just don't have a clue, and doesn't seem like they really care. But in small business is what. I don't know what it is. 50-60% of all companies are small business. So, of anything, you would want to come alongside them and try and keep the regulations down and taxes down, so that we can make more money with that. Then we hire more people. But
the National Federation of Independent Business here tells us. I've interviewed the Georgia director of that. by anybody's measure, job growth will be in the small business sector. That's who provides the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I asked a question. We had a sort of a tax consultant on here one time, and I asked him, and this is a guy that actually advises governments on tax policy. And I asked him, I said, do you think that the legislators in Washington that are writing the tax codes, how many of them do you think even know what a sub-S, a chapter, you know, a subchapter S corporation is? And he said, probably not 3 out of 10 know what that is. And those are the guys writing tax laws. And I'm like, well, I think that really should be the idea. If you don't even know, because that's that whole deal about let's just raise taxes and it won't hurt small businesses. And that's crazy because a lot of small businesses, do file their taxes under subchapter S, which means, at least we do, which means that, we're taxed, our business profits are taxed at income tax levels.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us take a lot of the money we make in business and we put it right back in that business because mm-hmm. we have to. And I think, like you said, the uncertainty of it. As a small business guy, President Obama made this rather unfortunate statement that you didn't build that. And I've thought about that a number of times. And let me just ask you, what if anything, do you owe others as a small business owner? What do you owe other people?
Well, I think that one of the neatest things that ever happened to me was that I never had to look for a job.
Right.
Even in college, my dad, he just wanted me to come in, and he just really encouraged me. And it's what a huge opportunity for a family business that you don't have to get out and look for a job, which is hard. My son's going through that right now. He's not coming in the business right now, and so I'm real thankful for that. It's really, I think that's one of the nicest things about having a family business, that it's a privilege to be able to do that and not have to really seek out and even have to move away to find a job that you feel like measures up with what you want to do. So that would be one thing. So I owe my dad just that hey, I want you to come and be with me,
right.
and we'll make it go, and you'll make as much money, if not more, with me, and it'll we'll build assets, and so that's what people. Sometimes it's hard when you own each other so bad with something that's some little thing. If you can always look at having a family business, there's so many advantages to it that you don't get in the corporate world.
I think small businesses in general, Tobin, I know we have, both of us know kids in our church and communities that are getting out of school and out of college and so forth and hunting jobs. And a lot of them still have this almost a World War II mentality or a post-World War II mentality that you go to these large corporations and that's where you get hired. But that is not where most jobs are. And I've told a lot of kids you should go. If you can go in and find a successful small business, you don't have to impress anybody but that probably one guy there. And if he likes you and thinks you've got potential, he'll hire you. And your career potential is as good with that guy as it's ever going to be with anybody else. Because you can become an integral and a very, very, very important part of that business. And that guy will learn to depend on you, and he'll reward you very handsomely as you help that business grow. And I just think that's a little bit overlooked today, as we still have this sort of a strange idea. I don't know about you. In our business, we have, we employ and we hire a lot of tradesmen, electronic techs and folks of that sort. Those are getting hard to find, and those jobs are there. I mean, you can make good money at that, particularly in the field I'm in. There's a lot of good money in that. And again, you got a little niche business there, the idea of selling airplane tires. What, that's a unique idea. I'm kind of like, yay America when I hear something like that. you take what is a throwaway from somebody else and make a business.
I know we're wanting to get that dirtiest job guy here. That would be really cool. So,
that guy. That's a good point. Yeah, you'd be a good show for that. Yep. We've often talked about if a reality TV came into our business, it would be pretty dull. I'd have to get the employees to make up something because we're pretty dull otherwise. That kind of deal. You are listening to Driven to Business. One more segment to go. Our guest is Tobin Sexton. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Don't go away. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. Glad you're here. We're talking with Tobin Sexton with Sexton Tire. Remind you again that you can reach Tobin at 770-466-1060 or go to TobinSextonTire.com or just Google Tobin Sexton Tire. You'll find it. Or go to EddieMayfield.com and there'll be links on there for today's program for finding him. Tobin, during the break, we were talking a little bit. I want to go back and talk just a moment about your the you didn't use the word branding, but that's sort of what I was thinking of when you were talking about that. When anyone thinks about an aircraft tire, they think about Sexton Tire. It's hard to get to that point, I think, but just give us a little bit about how important that is to establish a brand.
Well, it's everything. Especially for us, we want to sell aircraft tires when we possibly can because it's where we make our best money. And we feel like once we get a customer converted to aircraft tires and he's going to keep coming back to us, where if he bought new tires, he could call 100 different companies and get prices. So the branding it's always promoting, and you want to be strategic with that, and you just figure out what the customer's needs are, and then through our dealers, we just give them just great answers that hey, why do you want to sell them a new tire when you can sell them an aircraft tire and make 25-35% gross profit, where you're only going to make 10% on that new tire. And so that's kind of, and we've been doing that year after year after year after year, and now it's really paying off. And so that's how I view branding. Is if you're going to try and sell 50 different things, you're just not going to brand as well as you would if you just stay with our aircraft tires or our used tires and just between the two, just keep promoting, keep pushing.
So, well, you know, we face that in our company. I'm sometimes tempted because I'll see somebody make a little money over here or somebody make a little money over here in the periphery of our business. I'll think, oh, we ought to be doing that. And while it's okay to do that, you know, you can all of a sudden get yourself spread out so widely that nobody knows what you do. And we're in the electronic motor drive business, which again is a bit of an esoteric business. Mm-hmm. But when people think of electronic motor drives around here and electronic motor drive service, I want them to think of us. And we've even honed in more on the high voltage and the medium voltage, I should say, and the high horsepower. And that's where we're really making a deal right now. You know, also, you're talking about the idea, and I think anyone in business should understand where their money comes from. And, you know, you could be selling, you could have high revenue, you could have high sales in some area of the company and not be making a nickel there. We've had to do that in our own company in the past. We've had a large customer, for instance, it was a number of years ago, and that we were doing a lot of billings with. But when I analyzed we were not making any money. We were basically paying them to do business with them. And you have to sort of do a gut check on that and just say, well, we can't continue this. This has to stop. And you either just get out of that business or you raise your prices or whatever the case may be. But, you know, like you, our biggest revenue generator is service. We sell a lot of equipment. Mm-hmm. But our biggest revenue generator is service. And we've had to make sure our salespeople understand that a dollar of service business is not the same as a dollar of a equipment business. It's a lot better. And so, you know, when we can sell service, we do sell the service. Is I was going to ask you if you're an expanding or a mature business, and I think you're such a unique business. I don't know if that applies to you. You do seem to be finding new markets, though, for these aircraft tires, don't you?
Well, that's what's fun. I think everybody in small business ought to really look for the things that are fun. And for me, fun is when we have somebody, a new inquiry, and you just walk them through, and they're having problems, or they're searching, or they wouldn't be calling you in the first place. And
right.
if you can turn them on to our product, aircraft tires, and I just think that is so neat. You, whether it's putting them on a manure tank in Holland or a steel mill here in the United States, or we hang them over the sides of a big steamship down in Louisiana. It's just the coolest thing to see. I was over here on Center Hill Church Road, which is 5 miles from me, and there's a tractor that's cutting grass with aircraft tires on the front and aircraft tires on the back. And I'm going, yes, that's Red Van Satisfaction right there. So that's the fun part of our business right there.
I often tell people, and I even get a little trouble Tobin sayings at church, that fun is greatly underrated. Mm. You know, whether it's singing in a choir or teaching a Sunday school class or driving to work or playing with your kids or whatever, and even in business, fun, if something is fun to do, you will try to do more of it. Mm. And if it's an absolute chore, and that's not to say that everything, there are things that are just rote chores you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm having to meet with an accountant this week. That is my least favorite part,
yes,
of being in business. It probably is yours too, that having to deal with that side of it. But there is coming up with new applications and seeing our equipment go in different places. That is fun. I mean, business,
mm-hmm,
is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And resolving a problem is fun. Hey, both of us have adult kids. You've already alluded to that. What advice? I gave you sort of my advice. What advice do you have for young people starting their careers right now?
One of the things my dad would stay on me about is, son, get to work early. You can accomplish so much. And I'm not sure this generation even understands what that is, but if you can get to work early and you're willing to stay late, or you're willing to go travel to buy a deal, then that's what it's all about. If you're going to grow a company, that's what you have to do. And it's hard and it's tough sometimes. But if I had to say one thing that I'm successful from my 20s, it would be that I get here early. And I've already got everything taken care of and ready to answer phones at 8 o'clock. And it's just, it's paid off big time for me.
You know, you do hear, I tell you, we're really blessed in our company in that area. Now, most of our engineers and technicians, they like to come to work at 7 just to avoid traffic. And so,
mm-hmm,
you know, by 8 o'clock, they're deep into the day here. You know, it's kind of rocking on. And also, in many days, if we're not, you know, if it's allowed, that means they can go home early and avoid traffic, yeah, which is a good thing as well. I just think the idea of if you want something out of life, you've got to work for it, is just a good thing, a good value to just put in your heart and have there and understand, mm-hmm, that you have to earn your way through this. You know, you don't start off top of the pile, but you can get there.
Well, if I had some advice for kids, that my son's a perfect example. He's resume hunting now. Everything's done online. I would say to them, please don't think, if you take a pie, you got a whole pie sitting there. If you think you're going to start out with 3 or 4 pieces of that pie, you're mistaken. So be willing to get one good piece of pie and really, really enjoy that and work hard at it and move towards that second and third piece, and eventually maybe you'll get the whole pie. But you won't get the whole pie all at once. You just won't do it. So,
well, thanks a lot, Tobin. I'm hungry, which is not good. Tobin, as we, in about 30 seconds here, I know you're very active in church. Just tell us how important that is to you. I already know the answer.
Oh, being a Christian, knowing who God is through His Son is just it changed my life, and so it's just everything. So, even everything we've been talking about, it's still work. And at the end of the day, even though you might do well making money and all, there's still going to be something deep down inside you, a void, if you will, that only God can fill. And so how neat it is to know who God is and then use all the principles that he teaches you. And then that makes the blessings of your office and your company that much more better.
Thank you so much for being here today, Toby. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. See you guys next week.